This summer, as the Taliban took control of Afghanistan and U.S. troops officially left the country, the world watched as thousands of people tried to flee. Here's CNN's Clarissa Ward from the Kabul airport in August.
A crush of people pushing, shoving, screaming, children crying out. I can honestly say it was one of the more harrowing things I have experienced.
A couple of months ago, we here on the show talked to International Institute of New England as they were preparing to welcome hundreds of families from Afghanistan. Well, one of those families, the woman in the family, is Farhanda, and she and her family fled Kabul and settled in New Bedford last month after a three-month odyssey. We're using just her first name here. Her first stop, Qatar, and then...
We were in Germany for 35 days. Then on 14th of October, we came to America. Our first destination was Philadelphia. From Philadelphia, we left for New Jersey. Then again, we were in the airport and we came to Texas. We left Texas and we got on in New Bedford, Boston.
We spoke with her earlier today, and we asked her what was it like making the choice to leave Afghanistan.
Our minds were numb. We could not think about anything. The only our concern was our life, our kids' lives, our family's lives. For the same reason, when we were coming out of the Kabul, so no one was interested in asking, okay, where are we going? But everyone was just thinking, we can go out from here because we are in trouble. Our kids' life is not safe. We are not safe.
So all the focus was, we just have to get out.
Yes, we just have to get out of this place, the place we loved a lot, and we still love. And our home, our life, we had everything. Like, I had a good established home. I had a good job. I had my car. I had everything there. My life was quite good there. So I was ready to leave everything behind for nothing and leave the area just for my kids, for my life, for my family life. That was the only thing we were thinking.
Now you're in New Bedford, you, your family, your three kids. Do you feel like you left everything behind for nothing?
Actually, I would say that we are happy we are here. That's something really good. So the thing is, we have to start here from zero. Even I would say... If I say from minus, not zero, from maybe minus.
From less than 10. Zero?
Yes. Because we have nothing with us. We are totally blank. Like, we don't have any money. We don't have home. I would like to say something like that. Like, I have a home, but I don't have a home. I have money in bank balance, but I don't have anything, any money, any bank balance. Like, I have a car, but still I don't have a car. So that's something very strange. If I tell this to somebody, he will laugh. Okay, what are you saying?
And you mean because it's all in Afghanistan and not here?
Yes. Yes, all in Afghanistan. Everything is there, but still I don't have anything. I'm here, and so I have to start here. Like, my background is totally blank here.
How are your kids? Are they sleeping? Are they eating? Are they... how are they feeling?
They're feeling happy because the very first thing they were happy for when I got to New Bedford, that was, we have a home. Because for the last 3 months, we were just moving, and we were in tents, we were in camps, different kind of food. So the very first thing they were so happy for was a home.
Is there anything you are excited about now that you're here?
I'm very much excited about my life, my future, my kids, because as I told you before, we are totally blank here. Will I be able to have a stable life here, a good job here, so I can support my family, I can have a better life, the way I had in my own country?
And are you at peace?
Yes, yes. That's what I really want to say. And that when we were in Kabul, we were happy, but the only thing was missing was security for us. But we had learned to live with that. We don't have any concerns about peace here, but we have many other concerns that we didn't have there. So I think life is something, every time you should have a concern about something. Otherwise, that's not life.
That was Farhanda, and we're using only her first name to protect her privacy. She and her family lived in Kabul, Afghanistan, resettled to New Bedford, Massachusetts last month. We spoke with her earlier today. And we turn now to Anca Moraru. She is the managing director of the International Institute of New England's Boston office. In her day-to-day, she helps manage the resettlement of families from Afghanistan, including Farhanda's. Anca, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what's the community that Farhanda is joining? How many people have you helped resettle so far in this wave?
So we received 211 individuals since October 15 in Massachusetts. We've seen more individuals than we hoped to see in such a short period of time. In New Bedford, right now, we only put four families. We have a great community in New Bedford, and the community really stepped up, and they are helping the families to settle in New Bedford.
211 seems like a lot of people since October, but this isn't what most of us do for a living. Put that in context for us, 211 compared to, I don't know, last year or last time there was a large group you were resettling. Is it a lot?
Yes, last year we resettled, I think, 30 people in the entire year. So as you can imagine, is been taking a toll on our staff, and we are doing our best, but we have arrivals almost every day. We have few families arriving every day. And I think the most challenging part of all of this is housing shortage. So we just don't have enough apartments to set them up and get them ready for the clients. Some of the families will have to stay in a hotel until we can secure housing.
How does that make you feel to not be able, people who have left, as we heard Farhanda say, everything and come to nothing? And a three-month odyssey, and, you know, she told me earlier today, they never even knew from one city to the next as they were traveling how long they'd be there or where they were going next. How does it make you feel to not be able to give them some stability in their housing when they get here?
It's terrible, and we are trying so hard, and we just don't know how to do this better. We always reach out to the community and ask if they know anyone who can rent us apartments, who can step up and maybe offer even temporary housing, because that is so important. We don't want to put people in hotels, not even for a night. Of course, it's hard, but there are so many logistical challenges here. We have we receive travel notifications today for an arrival tomorrow. There is no way we can have an apartment ready by tomorrow. So it's very, very challenging. And our staff is doing they're doing their best, and they're terrific.
So Anca, let's step back for a second. So you just received travel notification today for a family that's coming tomorrow. In a normal world, when you receive that travel notification, what would you have to get ready in order for that family to come? And how long would it take to do that?
So the first thing is to find an apartment, rent the apartment, then furnish the apartment. We either get donated furniture or we buy furniture. And obviously, if we buy beds, it's going to take a few days for the beds to be delivered. We need to set up the apartment, as I said, and make sure that it becomes a home. And by grocery shopping, provide everything that is to be provided for a family to feel welcomed. And obviously, in a day or even 2 days, we just don't have the time to do that.
How many days does it take? Is it 2 weeks? Is it a month?
Yes, it is at least 2 weeks. And usually when we resettle refugees, we usually get between 2 to 3 weeks advance notice when we receive a travel notification. But right now, we just don't have that. We just don't have that, unfortunately.
So I heard you say earlier, you were saying, you know, we reach out to people. We ask them, do you know anybody who's got an apartment that they can rent, et cetera. I've done some work in this space in the past, and I know that rallying communities, having communities offer their resources, their support, having those volunteers be part of the solution can make a huge difference. Are our communities here in Massachusetts stepping up? And if they are, how? And if they aren't, what do you need them to do to step up?
We did receive an incredible community support. We have volunteers who are ready to set up apartments, to do a airport reception, providing food, actually cooking and providing food for our clients, doing grocery shopping with our clients, and not to mention many, many, many donations. I think housing is just hard in general to find. We do have people who are offering homestays for our clients, but we have some large families who it's kind of impossible to put in a homestay, so we would need apartments. So I think the most important thing for us, if anyone listens and is a landlord and or has some property, please reach out to us. We are helping these people to put their life together, and we will welcome any help.
Do you want to tell us your website? And we will have it on RadioBoston.org
yes,
as well.
Yes, our website is iine.org, and you can find all the information there. You can reach out personally to me if you have anything available or you know of anyone who is willing to rent.
And in the meantime, for those families in hotel rooms, are there things that community members can do to make them feel more at home? Are there donations that you need? You mentioned people cooking and serving meals, offering supplies. What else can Massachusetts families do to rally around our new neighbors?
I think for the families in the hotel, just visiting them. I think that some obviously will have to organize and coordinate some visits, but I think we want to make sure that our families feel welcomed. Even if they are in a hotel, they know that people are there for them and they are welcome in their new environment.
And how many more families are you anticipating? You've said 211 so individuals so far. Do you know how many more are coming?
Yes. So in Massachusetts, we already welcomed 211, and we are expecting a total of 425 by February.
That is breathtaking, given that last year you I hear your laughter. I guess I want to ask you, I mean, you're sounding so sane, right? In the middle of this important onslaught, how are you keeping everybody going? Where's the peace and joy coming from? Because I know that's important to then reflect on those who are experiencing disruptions we can't even begin to imagine for their families.
I think the most important thing is to think what's going to happen in 3 months from now, right? Like, where are these people going to be in 3 months from now? And thinking that in 3 months they will be in a welcoming home, and some of them will already have jobs, and they will be able to, the kids will be enrolled in school, and they will be able to put their life together. I think that's what we strive to make sure we are looking for that light at the end of the tunnel. And we know it's there. It's just going to be a really hard period of time until February when everybody's traveling. But I think we'll get through it, and then we'll help every single family become self-sufficient and feel like U.S. is home and Massachusetts is home.
So, Anca, I and we're on a hard clock, so really a one-sentence answer here. Everybody here by February, when do you think they're settled?
Well, I think some of the families who already are in their apartments, they are starting to be settled. We already have clients who are already employed. So, and right now we have all the children going through immunizations to make sure that they are enrolled in school. So I would think that from the date of arrival, it only takes a couple of months to really settle.
Anca, thank you so much. Anca Moraru, the Managing Director of the International Institute of New England's Boston office. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.